home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left! Notre Dame leads!
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Eric Hansen.
Budweiser's weekday sports feed, and we are live and on location at Mishawaka High School, where at 7:30 tonight, a little bit less than 2.5 hours, we have Mishawaka basketball against the Bremen Panthers in an NIC matchup. You'll hear it right here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT. But for the next 2 hours, we have Budweiser's weekday sports beat. We've got a lot coming up in today's show. NFL draft analyst Charlie Campbell of WalterFootball.com joined sports beat earlier this week. You'll hear some of his insights on what Fighting Irish players like Josh Adams, Jerry Tillery, and Equanimeous St. Brown might be thinking regarding their NFL draft decisions. Eric and I will also have some Citrus Bowl conversation. Notre Dame and LSU in the Citrus Bowl January 1st here on WSBT, 1 o'clock Eastern time. We'll talk a little about the Tiger offense. Former Purdue quarterback Danny Etling, the Terre Haute native, will discuss him a little bit. Then later on at 5:50, Eric's My Five Question of the Day. We've got Notre Dame and Indiana basketball coming up at the Crossroads Classics tomorrow. And Eric, in his young sports journalism career, at one time covered Bob Knight in the Indiana Hoosiers. So we'll ask Eric his top five memories from covering Indiana basketball back in the day. And then, speaking of Indiana basketball, in the second hour, Tom Noy, Indy basketball insider from the South Bend Tribune, comes aboard at 6 o'clock. We will be joined by Zach Osterman, who covers the Hoosiers for the Indianapolis Star. We'll talk to him for a little bit. And we'll also, later in the 6 o'clock hour, have some comments from Mike Bray on tomorrow's Crossroads Classic game, as well as his thoughts on future ACC basketball scheduling. He made some interesting comments yesterday, and so Tom and I will discuss that as well. And Tom will also have some updates on former Notre Dame players, Jaren Grant, Pat Connaughton, Demetrius Jackson, update on their professional careers. So we are live, and of course, Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And this is your first time in the Mishawaka High School gym, I understand, Eric.
In this particular Mishawaka.
In this one, right.
The main gym. I've been in the wrestling gym many a time, but not this one.
You've got your Bremen shirt on tonight.
I do. Is that who they're playing?
That is.
That's okay. Well, it was clean.
That's right. Always go for the clean shirt. Well, as I said, we've got a lot of different conversation, and the deadline for underclassmen to graduate or to declare for the NFL draft is exactly 1 month from today, January 15th. So players still have some time. Typically, they don't go right down to the wire, and I would imagine with the bowl game just a couple of weeks away, we'll probably hear something one way or another right around that bowl game, don't you? After the bowl game concludes anyway?
Yeah, I would think. I think most of them probably know what they're doing, but certainly Quentin Nelson does, and he's acknowledged that he's going into the draft, even though he's not showing up on the underclassmen boards. He's technically an underclassman, but yeah, usually, even if you know what you want to do, you don't want to be a distraction for your teammates and the media be talking about that instead of your football game.
So earlier, I guess it's been a week ago today, Drew Tranquil announced that he's staying with Notre Dame. He's coming back for his fifth year. That's big news for the Notre Dame defense. There are a handful of Irish players, though, who still have to make their decisions. And again, they have a month to make them, and they're probably they've received. Do you know when the advisory board from the NFL typically gets back the information to the players?
They usually get those kids usually get it around the bowl game.
Okay.
Like either just before or just after.
Okay, so they probably don't even have that feedback yet.
I wouldn't think so.
Okay. And that's I actually read some interesting statistics, and I think Charlie Campbell might even say in one of these sound bites, one of the things that he hears from NFL scouts is a lot of players do come out too early when they can stand to go back. I mean, we were all sitting here a year ago with DeShone Kizer. Brian Kelly took all the heat with the comments that he made about DeShone Kizer. And, of course, I mean, when you look at what's happened with DeShone this year, just for him personally, I mean, beyond a shadow of a doubt, he would have benefited, I think, by coming back for one more year. Because especially even when you look at this quarterback class, I don't think it has proved to be maybe as strong as we thought it was going to be a year ago.
Yeah, DeShone Watson was having a good year until he got hurt. DeShone Kizer, you know, we all thought he could benefit from coming back, and it blew up into weird news. But somehow,
and Brian Kelly still gets heat for it. Throw him under the bus.
Yeah, he had kind of said it to us, but then when he said it on a national radio show, and it gets in the aggregator mechanism, then it becomes a bigger deal somehow. But anyways, but the thing about DeShone was, if he was going to go, the hope was that he could go someplace where he didn't have to play a lot this
right.
year. That he could be kind of eased in, learn behind a veteran. And he went to the exact opposite kind of place, where he was default the most talented player, and there was nobody to learn from there.
Exactly. And that did not do him any good at all. And so, yeah, again, his situation, every situation's case by case. You don't know where you're going to go once you declare, and you don't know what's going to happen once you get drafted. But we did talk to Charlie Campbell from UltraFootball.com earlier this week. He evaluates film and also gets feedback from NFL scouts in making his evaluations. And they crank out mock drafts throughout the year. And I know Dan Patrick is one of these guys who hates mock drafts. And I think they're out there for a reason, just like almost like recruiting stuff. They're there because people like to see them. And if nothing else, they just kind of give you an idea of what might happen based on if the NFL team ends up in this spot, this is the need they have right now, this is what they might be doing, and that kind of thing. But in any case, Charlie gave us some feedback on a lot of different Irish players earlier this week on SportsBeat. So what we're going to do now, we're going to play some cuts on some of those specific players and then just kind of get some of your thoughts, and we'll talk about what we hear and what we think about what Charlie had to say. So we will start off with, again, this is a guy who we haven't necessarily talked about it in terms of draft possibilities a whole lot. But apparently NFL scouts think a lot of him, and that's Equanimeous St. Brown. So here's what Charlie Campbell had to say earlier this week on SportsBeat.
Even before the season started, I was in my preseason study, I was really impressed with what he did a year ago when he had DeShone Kizer at quarterback. And I thought that, you know, this guy has a world of ability in terms of size. He can run for that size too. You know, often you see big receivers coming to the NFL, but they don't have the quickness to run after the catch or to get open and get separation. And you saw that with St. Brown in the 2016 tape. And then fast forward to this year, you saw flashes of it. You know, late in the year, he has a huge game, you know, and there are other games in the year where you saw him getting open and you saw that they couldn't, you know, Wimbush was struggling to get him the ball. The completion percentage and the accuracy were, you know, problems that plagued the Irish all season long, and that really hurts a player like St. Brown. I think it also kind of led to some drops that he had just in the, you know, not being able to really get in much of a rhythm all year when he only has 31 receptions at the end of the regular season. So just that combination of size and speed is in demand, and this isn't a very strong receiver draft, and obviously that's a top need in the passing-driven NFL. So it wouldn't surprise me if he works out well, he ends up going higher than it thought. I've had some teams say they still think he has a shot at late first round. Others see him going day two. So he's kind of on that bubble. But you can't coach 6'5 and, you know, 200-some pounds with quickness. That just, you know, is a God-given ability he has. So if he enters the draft, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets late one consideration. If he does go to day two, I don't think he'll have that long of a wait.
So, again, there's Charlie Campbell talking about Notre Dame wide receiver Equanimeous St. Brown, who has a month to declare his NFL intention. So, Eric, just first instinct when you hear that.
I like the raw material that's there, and I understand why some of the reasons why his numbers are suppressed this year. First of all, Notre Dame was much more of a running team this year.
Right.
So they didn't throw the ball a lot. And then you had a quarterback that was around 50% with his completion percentage. And Equanimeous, certainly early in the season, got defensive coordinators just decided, okay, this is the guy we want to bring extra attention to. And had Stefferson played from the very beginning and been the Stefferson we saw at the end of the year, maybe Equanimeous' season turns out a little bit differently. But I still was surprised that Equanimeous wasn't able to muscle more. You know, one of the things he came into the season was that he felt like he was a lot stronger.
Right.
And so I thought he would be able to use his body and kind of push people around. And he really, legally, and he really and he really didn't. So there were a lot of factors there. It was a little bit of a head-scratcher, but I still think, you know, I remember the guy we saw last year, and I still think that guy's in there and a lot of good football for Equanimeous.
And that's the strength factor is something that I brought up with Charlie because, I mean, Equanimeous is still pretty – he has a really slender build still, and we've seen it that you can say that he does lack some physicality. And that is one thing that just the ability to go get 50-50 balls and things like that is still an issue for Equanimeous. So I don't know, but I'm shocked to hear that even despite the production that a lot of NFL guys, essentially most of the people that Charlie was getting feedback from are saying, he was saying, late first round or second day, and basically that's second round. So that's a first or second round guy right there. And that would be, if you're Equanimeous, it would be pretty hard to pass up.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you know, that you don't know is how much does he like college? How much, you know, does he want to get his degree in a normal time frame because he would have it by December of next year. Those are kind of the different factors. His dad, John Brown, is an interesting guy, former Mr. Universe and Mr. World and Mr. Galaxy or whatever they have these days for bodybuilding. But, you know, I know that the parents are very bought into the education part of it, yet the dad's a businessman, and he trying to weigh, okay, what's best for Equanimeous. If he comes back, is he going to have a similar year statistically? It doesn't always hurt you. I mean, Calvin Ridley plays for Alabama, and his numbers are better than Equanimeous, but I think he was only in the 50s in terms of catches this year, and there were a lot of guys that had a lot more than that, and a lot of people think Calvin Ridley's the best wide receiver in the country, even though he didn't come close to sniffing the Biletnikoff Award and didn't get a lot of All-America honors. That's the offense he played in, and I think pros know that. So I think Equanimeous probably has the most difficult decision.
I think so, too.
I think with the other guys, you'd say he benefits from coming back or he benefits from staying. I think it's an easier.
And here's one of the other guys. Here's Charlie Campbell talking about Josh Adams, whose decision is probably a lot different.
I've spoken with some scouts, and I told them where I thought of him, and they agreed and said that sounded right to them, and which was kind of a mid-round, third, fourth-round power back. Teams looking to have kind of a guy that can handle the heavy load and first, second downs, and handle kind of the bigger run fronts. And I think he has that ability, and I don't think lesser games against good opponents is really his fault. I mean, obviously, he saw a lot of stacked boxes this season, and he ran well against them, wore teams down, showed that ability to kind of put teams away in the second half. So I think he really had a solid year. I wouldn't blame him for coming out, given the amount of injuries that happened to running backs, taking that injury risk and coming back, not to mention you lose McGlinchey and Nelson. So that's really the strength of that offensive line going on to the NFL. So I wouldn't hold it against him if he came back at all, or if he went to the NFL at all. And, if he does come back, he is taking an injury risk, and his production could easily decline with lesser blocking in front of him.
And so that's Charlie Campbell talking about Josh Adams and what you were just saying. The decisions are a lot different. For Equanimeous St. Brown, the decision is he can come back, maybe get a little bit stronger, still have all the skills that he has, and even if he doesn't have a lot more production, he can still elevate himself to potentially a surefire first-round guy. For Josh Adams, though, I think the biggest thing that he has to weigh is the risk of injuries, especially when he was hobbled a little bit this year.
Right. And he was hobbled some last year with a hamstring.
True.
And his freshman year, I want to say he got a concussion one game, maybe the Pitt game. So I think he's had those, and that'll weigh against him. But, he had the knee injury in high school, so he's 52 yards away from the most productive rushing year in Notre Dame history. I would think he would go. I don't know. And I believe that I heard him say third or fourth round. Was that
right?
What he said?
Right.
I had heard higher than that, second or third round. And if it's second or third round, go. If he were my son, I'd say, where's your outline for your graduation plan? I just think it's a better business decision for him. And Notre Dame, what if Dexter Williams all of a sudden becomes better than him next year or healthier? What if Dexter Williams and Tony Jones have been healthy all this
year? Dexter wasn't already? Didn't so many people think that Dexter was already better, even though Josh was running down the field? And caveat, this is obviously one man's opinion, and there are a lot of people who do draft evaluations, everyone's going to have different thoughts on it.
And I believe the offensive line is going to be pretty good next year, but you are losing two consensus All-Americans, and it's not too often. That is decades since Notre Dame's had two consensus All-Americans on the same.
And they were close to having two unanimous. They were one All-American team away from having two unanimous All-Americans.
Right, the Sporting News.
Yep, exactly. So it's a tough decision. And obviously Quentin Nelson is a guy who could end up going down as the best ever at Notre Dame. It's just kind of the way it is. So there's going to be a natural drop-off no matter how good it is next year, unless the next two guys end up bullying a lot of people the way Quentin did. But Evan and I were talking earlier today that commitment video of his got out again.
I saw that.
I was saying it's so good. It's a combination of Top Gun and Stone Cold Steve Austin all in one, I think, with the leather vest and the sunglasses and the whole thing.
But it seems so un-Quentin Nelson.
I know.
Yeah.
My friends call me Q.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So search for the Quentin Nelson commitment video online if you can find it. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat with Notre Dame football insider Eric Hansen. I'm Sean Steyers. And we're continuing to look at the comments of Charlie Campbell from WalterFootball.com on some of these Notre Dame underclassmen who have a decision to make on whether they're going to stay at Notre Dame for another year or declare for the NFL. And next up is another interesting one, and that is a guy who was at nose guard this year, Jerry Tillery. And here's what Charlie had to say.
I haven't heard much on him, but I personally liked him, and I thought he flashed and jumped out, especially in some games early in the season with causing some disruption. I think he has some versatile size to him at kind of that 6'5", 300 mold. He could be a 4'3 defensive tackle. He could play end in a 3-4. If he got heavier, he could be a nose tackle, in a 3-4 as well as a 4-3. But I think he has some quickness and athletic ability to him. I think those 4 sacks that he had this year wasn't an aberration. So I recall even seeing in 2016, he played better than his stats illustrated. He caused more disruption at the point of attack than really the stat line showed. So, but I do think for him, considering I haven't heard a huge amount of buzz, it might be best to go back to school and continue to get better. And, talking with scouts, that's the common thing. They feel too many players are entering the draft too early these days, that they develop more physically, they're a year older, they have more experience, they play better.
And again, that's Charlie Campbell talking about Jerry Tillery. And when I hear that last part, I mean, I think about guys like Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey on the other side of the ball, who with the new strength program and conditioning program under Matt Bayless, not only was just their fundamentals better, but they were physically different guys this year as well, Eric. And I feel like Jerry Tillery with another year of that could just be flat out dominant next year if he stays in college.
Yeah, I think he could stand to improve, and I do think that there are NFL teams that'll still look at him as an offensive lineman like they did with Jerron Jones.
Yeah.
And that's what Jerron Jones is now. He's a taxi squad offensive lineman
right
in the pros. And so it would give him another year to establish that, hey, I belong on the defensive side of the ball. And we mentioned this earlier in the week. You know, Jerry is a guy that came to Notre Dame with big dreams academically beyond football. Are those still alive? And if they are, then why are you even thinking about coming out early?
He obviously last week had the opportunity to step up to the microphone after the Mike Elston comment saying he was hoping he was going to get another big announcement, and there was crickets instead. But, he had the chance to do that. But I guess if he's getting feedback, he does at least owe it to himself to see what the feedback says.
Yeah, and I feel like his feedback is probably going to say go back to school.
Yeah,
and remember,
I agree.
There are only 3 levels now. It used to be more detailed. It's first round, the next option is second round, the next option is go back to school. So that could be anywhere from third round to you're not getting drafted.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so those are some comments from Charlie Campbell from WalterFootball.com on Equanimeous St. Brown, Josh Adams, and Jerry Tillery, some of the underclassmen weighing their NFL or college futures, and they have a month until January 15th to make that decision on whether they're going to stay or declare for the NFL draft. 529 Budweiser's weekday sports meet. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, we will have a little Citrus Bowl conversation. We'll look a little bit at the LSU offense, the matchup with the Notre Dame's defense against the LSU offense and quarterback Danny Etling. We will do that next. Budweiser's weekday sports beat, Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Notre Dame versus LSU in the Citrus Bowl, January 1st, a 1 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff here on WSBT. Budweiser's game day sports beat comes your way at 10 a.m. that morning. You're going to be down there, aren't you, Eric?
I will, and I'll be awake at 10 a.m.
Do you drink coffee?
I do.
That's what I thought. I was telling Darren that I was disappointed because I thought, 10 a.m., Eric would bring his coffee and donuts, but then Darren said, well, I don't drink coffee anyway, so that's fine, but that you were going to be down there. So you'll be down in the sunshine of the Citrus Bowl in Orlando. Have you been to that stadium before?
I have. They played in a bowl game there in 2011. It wasn't the Citrus Bowl. It was what is now the Camping World Bowl, but at that time it was the Champ Sports Bowl. They lost to Florida State 18-14, I believe.
Somebody asked me this, and I haven't had time to look it up. Is it the same stadium where UCF plays, Central Florida?
I don't think so.
I didn't think so either, but like I said,
they've redone part of the stadium. They redid the bottom deck. I don't know how they did that without touching the top deck, but they've refurbished some of it since I've been there, so there will be some newness to it.
All right. All right. So, again, January 1st, 1 o'clock kickoff, 10 a.m., Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat, Game Day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl at 9 o'clock New Year's morning. I don't think Evan was going to go out partying anyway, but he'll be up bright and early to bring you that. So, former Purdue quarterback Danny Etling, who grew up a Notre Dame fan, as we found out earlier this week, down in Terre Haute. He's the quarterback for the LSU Tigers. He is 146 of 242, 2,234 yards, 14 touchdown passes, just two interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 155.3. He's completed 60% of his passes, so pretty solid numbers all the way around. Chris Dabe of the New Orleans Times-Picayune joined us earlier this week on Sports Beat. This is what he had to say about Etling's play at LSU.
He's very well-respected by the team. He's shown a lot of toughness. He played last year through a pretty severe back issue that required surgery, and he waited until after spring football to have that surgery. He said, you know, he didn't really reveal it until leading into this season, that there were times he was playing last year where he had limited feeling, even in some of his extremities, feet, limited mobility, but he would kind of gut through it. You could see it a little bit in his throwing. Accuracy wasn't always there, and it's, you know, sometimes it's still not quite always there, but he's very highly respected. He gets the job done, and I think his teammates really kind of gravitate to him. He's had some throws, but he's connected on a lot of deep throws. That's been an interesting thing with this offense. With Matt Canada, the first year coordinator, they do a lot with play action. They do a lot with jet sweeps. So he's had some opportunities to hit some pretty big passes, and LSU's converted a lot of 40, 50, 60 yard plays, you know, off some of those jet sweeps and play actions where Etling has made a pretty good throw.
So, again, that's Chris Dabe of the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Eric, is there a quarterback Notre Dame's played this year who Etling might compare to?
I kind of went through it, and there's not a real close comp. If you pushed me, I would say Ryan Finley from North Carolina State. NC State throws the ball a lot more, though, than LSU does. They're a lot more dependent on their passing game. Finley's got a lot more passing stats, but in terms of being good as far as turnovers and such, they're similar. You know, Etling's rushed for 107 yards for the whole season. You know, Finley's got a little bit more than that, but, you know, they don't depend on their feet in the running game too much, so he's the closest.
I agree. That's kind of who I was thinking, because when you go through, it's not Josh Darnold, it's not Lewerke or any of those. It's the closest, and I think a lot of it, as you said, just has to do with neither one of them turns the ball over a lot.
Right.
They're not overly efficient, but they're pretty efficient guys. And I think Finley,
and strangely, neither one of them is real good in the red zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true too.
Yeah.
So again, he's a really solid quarterback. I don't know how good he, but I think the biggest thing is when you look at Darius Geis, he's run for over 1,100 yards, 11 touchdowns. He's averaging over 5 yards a carry. And then the LSU's number two running back, Darrell Williams, 776 yards. He's averaging 5.7. He's scored 9 touchdowns as well. So the combination of that and what Chris was saying a minute ago, any concerns with Notre Dame's secondary with Etling when you look at the fact that with that the run threat and the play action that he'll use?
Well, their offense is so different than everybody else's that they've seen. And DJ Chark is their leading receiver, and he only has 35 receptions, but he averages 23 per reception. And so he's kind of like Equanimeous. He's a guy that they run the ball a lot. I mean, they're next to him. The next guy, I think, in receptions has 22, so they don't throw it that much, but he's a handful. And the other thing they do that's going to kind of scramble Notre Dame's defense, and it's a good thing that they have this extra time to prepare, is they throw to their running backs a lot, and they run their wide receivers a lot. You know, Chark had 12 carries. Derek Dillon had 14 carries. Russell Gage had 27. So they like that jet sweep action with those guys.
And that's something that Notre Dame's defense has sniffed out very well this year, those jet sweep type plays.
On the times they've seen them, they just haven't seen them this much.
Yeah, that's true.
But they have been really good. So again, their offense is constructed much differently than what we've seen this year.
LSU could also get left tackle K.J. Malone back for this game. He missed the last six games of the regular season due to a left knee injury. True freshman Sadiq Charles played in his absence, and it sounds like just some of the media reports that I've seen, they're sort of battling for that position now in their lead-up to the Citrus Bowl. What do you think is the biggest concern you have for the Irish defense in this matchup, Eric?
I just think it's dealing with LSU not turning the ball over. Notre Dame was really good when they could force turnovers, and LSU is one of the best, if not the best, teams in the country in turnovers lost. And that was problematic. You know, when Notre Dame could get you in that turnover game, when their defense was forcing turnovers, everybody played better. And so I'm curious if they can. Etling's only thrown two interceptions, for example. The running backs don't fumble.
And they do run the ball pretty well.
Yeah.
And I think that
Geis has speed.
Yeah,
I mean, if he's
exactly
100%, woo, look out.
And that's, I mean, for the most part, again, for the most part, Notre Dame has dealt with that well this year. Bryce Love, I mean, even though he ended up having over 100 yards, I think some of that played into the fact that Notre Dame's defense ended up being on the field quite a bit, and the Stanford had the lead, Notre Dame was playing from behind, all that kind of stuff. I think that kind of helped him snowball. It wasn't like Bryce Love had this monstrous game. For the most part, and you look at Ronald Jones, they shut him down. For the most part, Notre Dame has done pretty well against some of these better backs that they've seen this year.
Right. I think Geis is as good as they'll see. I think he's as good as Bryce Love when he's healthy. At least he was last year. He was really good. But, you know, he says he's going to play, and he's trying to get healthy, and we'll see if that's the case. But, you know, Darrell Williams is good, too. And LSU's offensive line is hoping holes. What they haven't done well is protect Etling. Etling's got sacked a lot. I like Notre Dame in that part of this matchup because I remember hearing the USC coaches and players saying, you know, we saw some things that we hadn't seen on film from them before, and it's because they had the bye week, remember?
Right.
And so I'm wondering if Elko will have some wrinkles for LSU that'll be difficult to deal with.
And I think that I mean, everyone's going to have some kind of wrinkles when you've got 5 weeks off before your game, but I'm just looking at that as possibly the biggest X factor between the rest that they're going to get with some of the banged up. And again, LSU gets that benefit as well, but the adjustments that Notre Dame was able to make over the course of just 1 week on both sides of the ball, and now they've got 5 weeks to prepare for this game, I think that could be really big for them.
I agree. You know, Brian Kelly's record is incredible in bye week games. It's the bowl games aren't as much, but with the bye weeks, he's 20-2 in his career, and I believe 9-1 at Notre Dame now.
We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, Eric's My Five question of the day, and with Notre Dame playing Indiana in the Crossroads Classic tomorrow in Indianapolis, the question is, what are Eric Hansen's top five moments from his time covering Indiana basketball back in the 1980s when good old Bob Knight was still around? We will do that next. My Five question of the day with Eric Hansen, South Bend Tribune Notre Dame football insider. I'm Sean Stiers. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five question of the day on Michiana's Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
With Notre Dame and Indiana playing in the Crossroads Classic Saturday, our My 5 question of the day today. What are Eric Hansen's top 5 moments from his time covering Indiana basketball? Number 5, Eric.
Gosh, I could come up with 500. I don't even know if I have the top 5 here. Number 5 was a road game at Ohio State, and Bob Knight was so mad at Marty Simmons and Mike Giomi, he made them find their own way home from the game.
Bob Knight made two players find their own way home from the game.
Exactly.
I guess I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised. All right, number 4.
Number 4, I kind of consolidated their 1992 Final Four run. It was Bob Knight talking about a concept called cerebral reversal that he made up in Idaho. Then we were in New Mexico, and there was Whipgate, where he had a whip at practice, and there's a picture of him on the cover of the Albuquerque paper whipping Calbert Chaney. That became a big thing. And then he and Mike Krzyzewski had a falling out in Minneapolis at the Final Four. So lots of drama on that one.
What year was that?
92.
Wow. All right. A lot of good stuff that happened. And those are all, as you said, I remember those happening. Number 3.
Number 3, probably the best game that I've ever covered of any sport. And it was the 1985 NIT matchup between Marquette and Indiana. They were two programs at the time that were kind of sliding off the national map. They both recovered, obviously, and they both in that game wanted to recapture that. And the Marquette fans were there in droves, and they started a chant before the game. And the Marquette cheerleaders were doing it right in front of Bobby Knight, going, "Throw a chair, Bobby, throw a chair." It went into double overtime. Marquette had 4 players on the floor at the end of the game. Rick Majerus was their coach. And IU ended up winning 94-82 in double overtime.
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment.
Number 2.
2 years later, IU wins the national title, and Bob Knight reinvents himself. And one of those reinventions, junior college transfer, and Keith Smart hits the game-winning shot against Syracuse to nail down the 87 title.
Eric's top 5. I'm having a hard time even writing the notes down on these. Eric's top 5 moments from his time covering IU basketball, and this was really some of the golden age stuff back in the 80s and early 90s.
If there was Twitter then, it would have exploded.
Number 5 is Bob Knight making 2 IU players find their own way home
from Ohio State.
From a game at Ohio State. Number 4 is IU's Final Four run in 1992 to include Whipgate down in New Mexico with Calbert Chaney. Number 3, the 1985 NIT against Marquette with Marquette cheerleaders chanting, "Throw a chair, Bob." 1987, the IU basketball team winning its last national championship, and the number 1 moment from Eric Hansen's time covering IU basketball.
2 words, the chair. That was incredible.
That's it. What year was that? Do you remember?
85. It was that same
85?
Year. Yep. It was 84-85 season. And it was a Purdue game at home. And Steve Reed was at the foul line. And Bob, I think, already had 2 technicals, and this one got him his 3rd in the ejection. He picked up, they had these orange chairs that they used to sit on instead of a bench, and he had already stuck his foot through one earlier in the season, and he grabbed it and he just tossed it out onto the floor towards Steve Reed and the official.
Man,
I mean, shooting the technical free throws.
You were there for like every vintage moment, I think, that happened in that span, huh? What was your last year covering IU basketball?
It was like 94, want to say, 94, 95, because then I did Notre Dame for a couple years.
All right. So those are Eric's top 5 moments from his time covering Bob Knight and the Indiana University basketball team. We'll take a timeout, then back to wrap up the first hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tom Noy has a column on DJ Harvey, freshman, looking ahead to tomorrow's IU-Notre Dame men's basketball game in Indianapolis. He will also have a notebook looking ahead to that game. We will have Bremen at Mishawaka Girls Hoops, Bremen at Mishawaka Boys Hoops, and Portage Central at Niles Boys Basketball, and of course, much, much more.
And those, of course, are the Bremen Lions. Apparently, earlier I said Panthers, and I apologize.
You were testing me.
That's right. I apologize to any Bremen fans who might have been listening. I didn't mean to mix up my felines there, but it is the Bremen Lions and not the Panthers. So that's going to be going on here tonight where Eric and I sit right now. We are at Mishawaka High School, and about an hour and a half from now, we have the Mishawaka boys against the Bremen Lions in an NIC matchup. The girls are getting ready to play right now. So it's been a big week. Eric, here real quick as we have about 2 minutes here to wrap up this first hour. Big week in terms of recruiting for the Fighting Irish. Doesn't seem like anything else is imminent.
Well, there's one kid that has set his commitment date for next week, and that's Braden Lindsey. That's the wide receiver Oregon. He is going to sign on the last day of the signing period, which is Friday. He's going to make his announcement and then do his signing at that time. I would say Notre Dame is a slight favorite for him to end up back in this class.
And that would be another big get for Notre Dame. Really impressed with just how the staff is done in the last calendar year with both of these recruiting classes.
In the last calendar month and just travel alone with all the home visits, too.
There weren't any trips to Hawaii this time out, though, were there?
No, not at this juncture. There will be at some point, but not right now.
All right. So
in the cycle.
Yeah, that's right. And again, for those who haven't been following recruiting that closely, there are two signing days this year. This is the first year that there's going to be an early signing period for college football. And as you've said, Brian Kelly just loves this. And it's going to be interesting to see what the rest of the coaches in the country think about this and if this continues or not.
I think it's going to. I think the only thing that they might try to do is move it up to August at some point. But can you imagine having 20 or 21 guys signed in your class and only have to chase four in the last part? Now it's gonna restrict movement. You know, you're not gonna see probably as much poaching going on.
All right, very good. Thank you very much, Eric. Have a good weekend. I guess it'll be a while. I'll be off for the next couple of weeks, but enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good.
Tom Noy joins me for the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Coming up next on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, South Bend.
Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush, 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in, 92 yards.
Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame, 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Here are your hosts, Sean Stiers and Tom Noy.
We're coming back to you live from Mishawaka High School, where we have Mishawaka against Bremen in boys basketball action at 7:30 here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. And with Tom Noy,
the I'm on site, baby.
Insider. That's right.
We're right here. We're on location.
I've got both insiders on site here tonight. It was Eric Hansen's first time inside the cave here at Mishawaka.
Are you kidding?
I know it wasn't your first. This isn't your first time,
no.
Right?
Eric Hansen,
long shot.
Eric Hansen has been writing for the South Bend Tribune since before I joined, and he's never been to Mishawaka High School.
Well, he's been to the high school, but not inside this gym.
I mean, to the cave. Come on. You got to be in the cave.
I was surprised as well, but hey.
It's the oldest gym in Indiana. Still active, right?
That's right.
There you go.
That is absolutely right. We've got, of course, Notre Dame and Indiana coming up tomorrow. Crossroads Classic at Bankers Life Fieldhouse tomorrow. 2:30 is the tip-off. Pregame at 2:10 with Jack Nolan here on WSBT. And we are joined right now by Zach Osterman, who covers IU for the Indianapolis Star. How you doing tonight, Zach?
I'm great. How are you all?
Outstanding, my man.
We're doing very well. Let's start with this. It is the Crossroads Classic, and Mike Bray likes the Crossroads. Zach, what do you think IU fans think of the Crossroads Classic?
You know, it's funny. There's actually, and I think I wrote about this last year, 2 years ago, one of the two. Tom can attest they all start to blend together at a certain point. But there's actually a fairly sharp divide. I mean, it's very popular with fans in Indianapolis, as you would imagine, because Indianapolis is sort of the central power base for the IU sort of alumni network. And anytime Indiana plays in Indianapolis, fans really enjoy it. I think they really enjoy kind of the place that it's come to occupy on the holiday calendar. Out of state, I don't want to cast too many generalizations. I'm sure I could find you people in Indianapolis that would rather Indiana be playing in more prominent sort of games against like a Kentucky or an Arizona, or Indiana actually turned down a spot in the CBS Sports Classic a few years ago. That's with Kentucky, UNC, and UCLA, because it's the same day as the Crossroads Classic. But there is kind of a sharp divide. I think it's much more popular with fans in-state, and particularly in Indianapolis. And I think fans out-of-state just feel like Indiana should maybe be aiming a little bit higher, and that probably sounds a little bit elitist. Because, look, I mean, Indiana's playing ranked teams fairly consistently. It is pretty consistently a good RPI win for Indiana if they can pick it up. And I've seen Indiana's seasons turn around. I mean, a couple of years ago, I think Indiana's turnaround to a Big Ten title campaign started with coming back and beating Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic. But yep, it is kind of a sort of, I guess, Fisher point in the IU fan base, particularly if you're kind of talking about in-state attitudes versus out-of-state attitudes.
It's kind of funny because we talk all the time about the parallels between Indiana basketball, Notre Dame football, and yep, hearing those things are like things that you would hear in regards to Notre Dame football fans, I think.
Absolutely. This is the correlation of Notre Dame football fans saying, why are they playing Miami of Ohio,
exactly,
and Ball State and Temple and teams like that?
Yep, exactly.
All right, Zach, what are we going to see from this IU outfit when we go to Bankers Life Fieldhouse tomorrow? As far as, I know, you wipe the Indiana State loss off the board because that's the first game with Archie Miller and everything, but is this team close to putting together 40 minutes after what we've seen against Duke and then most recently last week at Yum Center against Louisville?
I don't know if 40 minutes, maybe like 30 minutes, and I don't say that in a flippant way. I mean,
right.
I really mean, like, I think, Archie Miller even said yesterday that he feels like, and I think he was talking particularly on the defensive end of the floor, mm-hmm, I think he was talking about, he sort of said, and I forget his exact verbiage, but that he feels like this team's got a stronger sense of its kind of identity and how to play the ways that it wants to play and be confident in the way it wants to play for longer stretches now than it did even a month ago. And it is weird to think that Indiana State was, like 36, 37 days ago.
Yeah.
If you watched Indiana State, then Duke, then Louisville, you'd see three IU losses, and I think you'd see three completely different performances.
Right.
So I don't know if it's a 40-minute performance, but I do think that this team is a lot more at home with, A, what it wants to do, what it should look like, quote-unquote, to get the defensive end of the floor, and B, how to kind of trigger that, how to find that comfort zone, I guess. It's just a question. It still gets kind of chopped up too much, that it'll be good for 5 minutes, and then they'll have a bad 3 minutes, and then they'll have a good 3 minutes and a bad 5 minutes, and it just kind of winds up still feeling very inconsistent, though you do see progress, if you start kind of from the beginning of the season to today.
I know it's early still with your relationship with Archie Miller, but how much does it drive him nuts, his team giving up over 74 points a game?
Yeah, I mean, he's a defense-first coach and always has been. I remember talking to his dad, who was a legendary high school coach, won 650-some-odd games in Pennsylvania, four state titles, and his dad clearly with a guy that prioritized kind of defense turning into fast break offense. And it's funny, and I don't say this flippantly either. Tom Crean obviously had some seasons near the end where Indiana really struggled defensively, and he tried a lot of different things, a lot of different defenses, man-to-man zone, different kinds of zones. At one point, literally even a man-to-man defense that shifted into a zone defense mid-possession sometimes. But the one thing I don't really ever remember Tom trying was the pack line. And so
right.
This is kind of a completely foreign system. And I think, again, I think Archie Miller is getting more comfortable with where his team is. I think he's getting more confident, and I think he's seeing his team growing more. But, you know, you still feel like there's a level, there is kind of a concerted effort not to be satisfied, even not just with the defensive performance, but I mean, I asked him after they lost kind of heavy at Michigan in their Big Ten opener just a few days after a really encouraging Duke performance. I said, was it disappointing after the encouragement of the Duke game to see this? And he said, we didn't beat Duke. I don't want people to walk around here feeling like Duke was a positive. We were up one with 4 minutes left against a great team at home with a great crowd, and we lost. We can't, that can't be good enough. And I think that's just kind of where he's going to be with this team in a lot of different areas, defense in particular, for a while.
Talking to Zach Osterman, who covers IU for the Indianapolis Star. When you look at what Indiana is right now, what maybe are the biggest fundamental differences between Tom Crean's Indiana teams and Archie Miller's Indiana?
Well, I think it is that defensive emphasis, and I'm not trying to kind of, you know, sort of throw coal on Tom or anything like that. His teams were elite at their best at the offensive end of the floor. But they struggle with defense, and they struggle with turnovers. Too consistently, you know, for that to ultimately prove, you know, manageable over time. This is a team that is turning the ball over a lot less. I mean, it's funny. They've got a turnover rate that's outside the top 100 nationally, and yet it is, like, more than, I think, 3% or nearly 4%, 3.5%, 4% lower than it was last season. So they're turning the ball over a lot less. They've got a long way to go defensively, but you still, if you saw them play Louisville and you saw them play Indiana State, you'd know how far they've come there. And I think that it's really about being a team, particularly this group that maybe doesn't have the star power of a Yogi Ferrell or the ability, like the last, you know, some of Tom Crean's teams did, to just shoot their way out of a hole. This team doesn't have those things. It's got to start with valuing possessions, whether it be defensively or not turning the ball over and not taking bad shots, frankly, because Indiana's just not a good enough offensive team to compensate for that.
Zach, when Matt Farrell and TJ Gibbs are attacking for Notre Dame at the guard position, that's an indication that this team's really rolling. They're feeling good. They're attacking. They're playing downhill and coming at you. What are some signs that maybe if fans see early in tomorrow's game at Bankers Life Fieldhouse where IU's doing this or maybe that they may be able to give Notre Dame a pretty decent game tomorrow afternoon?
I think, number one, if they can get the post game established. I mean, their two leading scorers are Juwan Morgan and Deron Davis. They're starting forwards, both of whom have really improved rapidly, I think, this season. They both, at times, had foul trouble. But when they've been able to stay on the floor, I mean, Deron Davis was going right at NBA-level bigs against Duke in the second half of that game and scoring almost at will. Juwan Morgan has scored double figures in six of his last seven. He had 17 and 9 against a really athletic Louisville front court. So if you can get those guys established at the offensive end of the floor, and then if the three-point line is a weapon for Indiana at either end, Notre Dame is a very accurate three-point shooting team. Indiana has had a lot of trouble with three-point defense this season. Indiana also has had a ton of trouble with its own accuracy from behind the three-point line, which is that's maybe one of the biggest sort of statistical surprises. There are guys on this team that are struggling badly from behind the arc that you would not have expected based on kind of their career to this point. If Indiana's either A, going toe-to-toe with Notre Dame at the three-point line, or B, running Notre Dame off of the three-point line and not letting Notre Dame use the three-point line as a weapon, and establishing their front court at the offensive end, Indiana, I think they've got a chance.
That was really my question, was Indiana at the defensive end, because they have given up some threes, and Notre Dame is Notre Dame might not be as good right now by their own standards, but they are still pretty good from the line. How has Indiana struggled so much getting out there and guarding?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been some rotation issues. And again, the pack line is like this one sort of mainstream defense that's totally foreign to these guys. And it is a defense that can be, if you don't run it well, because it kind of requires everybody to sag in and take away driving lanes, if you make just one or two mistakes, it's a defense that's really vulnerable from behind the arc, because all of a sudden the whole defense gets out of rotation and you get open shots. But you even look at, like, I mean, Indiana State as an example. Indiana State shot 17 of 26 from behind the arc in that game, which is better than 65%. On the season, Indiana State is a solid three-point shooting team, certainly not one that you would expect to be that devastating. And I think Indiana's kind of gotten to this place where it's not just about struggling to defend the three. It's also that they've given opponents, whether those opponents statistically feel like they're good at shooting the three, or those opponents statistically maybe are not great at shooting the three, you just give kids confidence to say, even the ones where maybe their shots aren't going down, to say, tonight they will, because I know Indiana, because the scouting report says Indiana's bad at three-point defense. I'm going to get the shots I want tonight. I'm going to get clean looks, and I'm going to knock them down in the way that I know I can. And so suddenly, you're not just giving up some open looks, but you're getting really confident shots, even when you're contesting some of them. And so you feel like all of a sudden even the junk three-pointers are going in. And you just, you know, you sort of feel like, well, what can we possibly do about this? I think Indiana was better against Louisville. But Louisville can't shoot nearly the way Notre Dame can, at least not if you look at the numbers. So I think it's going to be a really big test for Indiana.
Zach, Mike Bray mentioned yesterday, he said when Colin Hartman's playing well and he's in the lineup, he just gives that team so much swagger. What is it about Colin Hartman that gives that team maybe a little bit more confidence playing against a Louisville or Notre Dame than maybe when he's sitting on the bench with an injury?
Well, he's certainly, I think, this team's best leader. I mean, he's one of its most experienced players. I think he's one of its best sort of organizers and court communicators. And look, I know what it sounds like. I've been saying this for 3-4 years now. I know what it sounds like when I say that a 6'7 white kid, you know, he hit threes and makes smart plays and all that. But he does a lot of the dirty work and the kind of stuff that maybe doesn't always show up in the points column. But if you look at the end of the day and he's got like 7 rebounds, or he's 3 of 3 from behind the arc, or he hasn't committed any turnovers in, you know, 4 games, that kind of thing. And I think he's just one of those guys that, even though he's not necessarily a volume scorer or a dominant rebounder or a dominant rim protector, because of his experience, because of his ability to communicate and lead and do all those things very well, when his teammates see him out there on the floor, they're just confident. And they get confidence from him. I think he's kind of been right around the 20-minute mark or so. He had a couple of nagging injuries through the preseason, so they've kind of been easing him back into full fitness, wanting him to be really ready for Big Ten play. If he can play more minutes tomorrow than he's played maybe kind of on the regular these last few weeks, I think it could be an interesting matchup for Bonzi Colton that might free Juwan Morgan up a little bit. And then Hartman's not really a bad defender as long as he's kind of near full strength. I wouldn't be surprised to see Indiana maybe throw him at Colton a little bit tomorrow.
Zach, my last question for you. When it's all said and done, what will constitute a successful season for Indiana this year?
I think, you know, if Indiana gets to February and you can see a team that is markedly different and markedly more competitive than what it was even in the Big Ten opener at Michigan, I think that's a big step. I certainly think if you can start, I mean, it's kind of a weird team because there was a coaching change and yet Archie Miller inherited a 5-man senior class. And they lost 3 guys to the NBA and there's still 5 seniors on this roster on scholarship. So if you can, I think this has been why Juwan Morgan's emergence has been important. If you can also see some younger guys who are going to be juniors and seniors next year, really start to emerge and get comfortable in bigger roles, I think that's promising because the recruiting has been very good and there's some really talented young players on the way. If you can build a foundation where maybe you've got good leadership and good production for those young guys next year, that's positive. And then, you know, if you're Indiana, I mean, they did come close against Duke. Maybe not horribly close, but they were right there. They were right there for a while against Louisville. That game was, I think, down to 3 points with a minute remaining. If they can pick up a couple of those wins, if they could beat Notre Dame tomorrow, or they could maybe, you know, get a couple of Big Ten road wins they aren't expected to, maybe even finish at or above 500 in conference play. Again, Archie Miller wants to be pretty uncompromising in what he expects and what he wants. But I think a lot of people understand that this needs to be a year of transition. And if you can say that Indiana is A, much better as a team at the end of the season than they were even maybe at the start of Big Ten play in early December, and B, that provides an obvious kind of bridge to the future as you've got some really talented young players coming in the next class. I think that's a successful season.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much, Zach. We appreciate your time tonight.
Absolutely. Tom, we'll see you down there tomorrow. Drive safe.
You got it, my man. We'll see you.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star covering IU basketball. And, of course, as he said, you'll both be down there tomorrow.
That we will. We will be down in Bankers Life Fieldhouse eating all the pizza we would like.
Good pizza at Bankers Life Fieldhouse?
No.
But it's there.
It's there, and you just kind of – I just kind of great. Maybe take a slice every once in a while just to tide me over for the ride down and then the ride back afterwards.
Will you go early enough for the first game, or you just kind of go to the game you're focused on?
Yeah, no, we'll kind of slide in. Butler and Purdue play at noon. Get there maybe 12:15, 12:20, right after the traffic, and so the traffic's maybe a little lighter, and then – get focused and ready for the Irish and the Hoosiers at 2:30.
All right. Sounds good. Now, this is this crossroads, as cool as it's been, will it continue into the future? We've got some scheduling
issues.
Things that we're going to talk about. Mike Bray brought up some good points. Both the Big Ten and the ACC are going to 20-game schedules in the future. So we're going to talk about that and more when we return. You'll hear some of Mike Bray's comments regarding scheduling for the ACC, Matt Farrell and his shot, the Crossroads Classic, all kinds of stuff coming up next, along with Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune. I'm Sean Stiers. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Along with South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy, I'm Sean Stiers. We're coming to you live at Mishawaka High School. If you hear those buzzers and whistles and such in the background, that's why. We've got Mishawaka boys basketball against Bremen coming up in about an hour here on WSBT. We were just talking during the break, Tom, and Evan Sharpley and I were talking earlier on our show today. We were talking about this Pittsburgh radio guy kind of lobbing the accusations, unfounded accusations about Tom Brady.
Those are always good.
Yeah, I know.
To do on radio.
The best ones, right?
Right.
But it got us, the accusations are about PEDs, nobody talks about Tom Brady, yada, yada, despite the fact that he has the most insane diet, strict diet of just about anyone you're ever going to see. Now, that doesn't mean that he couldn't be on something, too, but there's no proof, no rumors of anything, but
nope.
This guy just lobbed it. But the bigger conversation that we were having is about performance-enhancing drugs, PEDs, and Evan's take was, instead of professional sports completely banning it, find a way to regulate it. What do you think about that?
Regulate it because they're going to try to find a way around anything as it is.
Right.
So why not streamline it and put some sort of guideline out there to have some sort of standard? And what that would be and how they would do it, who knows? But maybe that would cut down on the is he or isn't he or isn't he. Okay, they all are. Because you know a lot more people are doing it than what's reported or what's discovered.
Being caught, or, that's right.
You know, with recovery and the insane amount of the insane schedule that NFL players, and like you said, not necessarily just NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, it's a 12-month a year cycle with everything.
And just the demands on the bodies that these guys have. And that's why more people have to be doing it than what are reported, like you said. But it would make some sense when you think about, because most of these guys, I think, are using this stuff to recover from some kind of injury. They're trying to get their body to speed it up so they can play again.
And it's not necessarily injury. It's just being worn down. Like
right.
At the end of the year where this is what week is it in the NFL? 13?
It's week 14.
14,
actually.
And you're playing on a Sunday and turn around, you got to play four nights later and play on a Thursday. You've got to get back and get recovered. So it's just this is the way of the sports world that we live in 2017.
Notre Dame basketball coming up tomorrow at the Crossroads Classic as the Fighting Irish take on Indiana. It's a 2:30 tip-off, 2:10 pregame with Jack Nolan here on WSBT. Mike Bray had a little press conference yesterday, and Tom Noy asked Mike Bray about kind of changing the Banker's Life karma that the Irish have had.
Bad karma.
Their last couple of trips down, and here's what Mike Bray had to say.
Yeah, we've had some tough ones there. We were on such a good run before the last two. You know, getting off to a good start certainly helps. There's no question about it. We got a heck of a challenge, you know, when you think about them. You know, Davis gives them such a physical low post presence. And how are we going to guard that, and how do we help on that? You know, they got two really good senior guards in Newkirk and Johnson who just have played a lot of basketball and are men. And Hartman being back, I think, really changes them. He's kind of the straw that stirs the drink, you know. So we know it will not be a neutral site atmosphere, even though it'll be listed on our schedule as a neutral site game. But, you know, hopefully, because we've played on the road already at DePaul, at Michigan State, at Delaware, even the Wichita State game was kind of road-like, you know, you're able to handle that environment maybe a little better than if it was one of your first times in a true kind of road atmosphere.
That's Mike Bray talking about changing Banker's Life karma. One of the things he said, Tom, was get off to a fast start, but the last two times down there, they've got off to pretty good starts. They just haven't finished.
Yeah, it's not the starts that have bothered them. It's the second halves. They led Indiana 2 years ago by 16 points, lost. They led Purdue last year by 17 points, lost. I think they were outscored in the second half last year, something like 48-29. So it's putting together a full 40 minutes. And like Mike Bray said in that clip that we just heard, I would be really, really discouraged and disappointed if I'm a Notre Dame fan and they don't bring, if they get caught up in the atmosphere tomorrow. Like, they've been everywhere.
Yeah.
They played at DePaul. They played at Michigan State. They played three games in Maui. They played at Delaware, which was a pretty weird atmosphere, a tough atmosphere, because you had only 4,700 fans there, but it's a bandbox type of a gym that made a lot of noise, and Notre Dame had to be really good to build that 24-point victory the other night. So it's a weird afternoon again for so many reasons. You know, you're coming off of final exams. It's like a true road game with all the Indiana people. But Notre Dame has been through a lot, and they've done a lot to date this year to where I just can't see that being much of a factor. And if it is, then Darren and I are talking on Monday about how Notre Dame's 8-3 instead of 9-2.
That's very true. Biggest thing that concerns you about Indiana in this matchup tomorrow is what?
A lot of what Zach said. You know, they like to pound the ball down low and just crush teams scoring points in the paint. They did it against Duke and their NBA-ready front line. They did it against Louisville and all their shot blockers. And then also, the fact that they have not gotten going from the three-point line, that's right there. When Zach says that, I'm thinking, okay, Robert Johnson's going to come out and hit like four straight threes tomorrow. And if they do, it's like a Ball State situation where everything just kind of changes and you get an average team playing more confidently in a building that's going to be pro IU. And if you do that, man, it's going to make it that much tougher for Notre Dame to try to skate out of there, get back on the bus, and get up US 31 with a victory tomorrow night.
And, of course, it is the Crossroads Classic. That means Purdue and Butler are playing in the early game. And for Notre Dame, the Crossroads Classic means alternating back and forth between Purdue 1 year, Indiana the next year. And
it's never going to be Butler.
That's right. It'll never be
Butler.
Well, and I don't know if maybe my question was confused. I didn't mean to imply that they would play Butler down there. But
yeah, you can't, obviously.
He's not going to play. Mike Bray did say he's not going to play Butler, even though he's played just about everybody else in the state of Indiana in the last 4 or 5 years. But he's not going to play Butler.
Not doing it.
But here are some of his thoughts on just the event that is the Crossroads Classic.
Well, what is this, the seventh year of it, I believe. You know, it's been a great idea, you know, to have the four in-state schools play. Number one, you have a sold-out building, and you really have a great atmosphere in the building. I mean, and we know how Indiana, the state of Indiana, loves basketball. So I think that's been positive. I've been encouraged the last couple years that our people have now started to to come out more. You know, I was leery about getting into this because historically, long before me, we had not drawn well when we went to Indianapolis and played. Our people just didn't really come out. And but they have been, and that's been good. You know, that then now you feel better about the thing, even though we do know we'll be thoroughly outnumbered. We're still going to have a pretty good section on Saturday. So you know, recruiting. You know, when you're recruiting in the state, I think all the in-state kids watch this. They're probably at it. All the in-state kids that are within, you know, they've got tickets to it. We can't leave tickets because it's not a home, but I bet you they're all there. So it's a nice showcase. You know, for you know, your in-state recruits as well.
So there's Mike Bray talking about the Crossroads Classic and the Irish playing there tomorrow. And we're going to have some more of his comments about scheduling, but one of the things, the ACC is going to a 20-game conference schedule in a couple years, Tom. The Big Ten is going to a 20-game schedule next year. Do you think that's going to affect the ability of this event to continue?
Yes. It is signed through 2019, and honestly, I would be surprised if it gets extended past that because of the 20-game league schedule, where you've got two more power games coming on the ACC schedule. Where if you're looking at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame has no idea what those two additional games would be, but let's say your repeat opponents become Duke and Syracuse, or Duke and Florida State, or North Carolina and Virginia, or North Carolina and Miami. You really got to take a look at that and say, is it advantageous for us to play in Indianapolis? Now, don't get me wrong, it's a great event, but it's been a great event now for 7 years. And I think after 9 years, it kind of runs its course to where the novelty wears off. And honestly, it's a quicker trip to go from here to East Lansing to play Michigan State almost than it is to go from here to down all
yeah,
the way down.
By the time you get to downtown Indy, that's right.
Right. It's a tough trip for Notre Dame. It's easy for the other schools. Butler's like, what, 20 blocks away?
Yeah.
40 blocks away, just right up Meridian.
Purdue's not that far away.
Purdue's not far, and Indiana's not far. It's a haul for Notre Dame. And so after 9 years, do you still want to keep playing Indiana and Purdue, or do you want to get more national and maybe go west more often? Or go back to the Northeast more often? It's going to be something that Mike Bray is going to have to think about once they go to the 20-game league schedule.
That's right. We'll get back to some schedule stuff here in a minute. First, though, Matt Farrell. And what's going on with him is a pretty vital part of what's going on with the offense. He was 5 for 7 from three-point range against Delaware last week, 8 of 13 overall. But he was 4 of 17 in his previous three games from three-point range. So a big difference. Now, that's a problem with shooting, but it also kind of cost him some confidence in turning down some shots as well. And Farrell hunting his shot is something that Mike Bray is encouraging him to do. And here's some of Bray's thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think that's that's an ongoing discussion with him and a reminder of him. When we scrimmaged on Tuesday, we scrimmaged, and I actually told him, I said, we played some 4 or 5 minute periods just to get a sweat in the middle of exam week. I said, if you have just a little window of a look, I want you to take it today. Like, see what that feels like. You can't turn them down. Even early in the game, you gotta hunt it for us early. And so that's a work in progress. We gotta stay after him about that. I think his teammates have been on him about that.
It's a little bit like Brandon Wimbush to some extent, with Wimbush maybe
it all comes
wanting
back
things
around
to
the
be
football.
Too perfect, right? No, but just the analogy, Wimbush wanting things to be too perfect, and maybe that's how Matt Farrell has been a little bit with his shot selection.
And when you mentioned the percentages that he was for three when he went that stretch of 4-17, that included a game where he went 0-8 against St. Francis of Brooklyn, and that snapped his streak, longest streak in the ACC, 31 consecutive games with at least one three-pointer. And Matt Farrell's just got to look at the history maybe a little bit more, dive a little deeper into the history of shooters playing for Mike Bray, because Mike Bray is the ultimate confidence giver.
Yeah.
He's not going to bench anybody.
Never benched VJ last year.
Right. He's not benching anybody for going 0 for 11, 0 for 12, because he's thinking the next two, three, four are going to go down. So Matt Farrell is still, he's still trying to get to that place to where it's okay for him to be selfish and look to shoot first. He's the point guard. He's the guy, and he said the other day, he and TJ, they both said they're the engine that make everything go. But it's okay for them to look early offense. I'm going to just pull up and take this three, this quick three. And if it doesn't go, that's all right. You know, Mike Bray is not going to bench Matt Farrell if Matt Farrell takes a quick three. And I was standing with Matt Farrell's father, Bob, the other day at Delaware after that game. And he was telling his son, he goes, look, I know you're the point guard, but you just need to be more selfish. And that's not just a dad telling his son that. Mike Bray has been hammering that home since summer. Like, if you've got to pull up right there, pull up and take it.
He's the shooter now.
You got it. Yeah, you've got you because they don't have a guy that they're going to swing it to and can get his own three-point shot like a Steve Astori or VJ Beecham. They don't have that on this team.
Well, that's – yeah, when you don't – it was one thing when it was Farrell and those two. Now it's Farrell and T.J. Gibbs. You're still missing that third guy. Maybe at some point D.J. Harvey kind of picks that up, but he's not ready right now. So if it's two instead of three, the number one guy has to be even more the number one guy, and eventually that's also going to help out the number two guy.
And it's going to open everything up inside for Fonzie Colson and Martin Gebin, and maybe give Rex Pfluger a few more driving lanes to do what he can do offensively. But there's no shame if you're Matt Farrell looking at the final box score and being 6 of 18 from the field, because you're still going to have 7 assists, and odds are the other guys are going to get involved as well. So a good attacking, aggressive, a shooting Matt Farrell is good for this Notre Dame men's basketball team.
Absolutely. With South Bend Tribune Notre Dame basketball insider Tom Noy, I'm Sean Steyer's Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Now, back to the schedule stuff. There is an interesting, we've talked about the 20 games, but there's an interesting proposal that the coaches made
like that
regarding how they would start off this 20-game schedule, and here's Bray telling us what it is.
One of the things we actually proposed was the start of the season legislation is changing next year. Instead of opening on a Friday, you can open on a Tuesday. One of the things we actually kicked around in our ACC coaches meeting was Tuesday and Wednesday night, opening night of the basketball season, ACC basketball. We just play right out of the gate. I think it's a great idea. I think we got to start thinking like that a little bit. Of course, well, you know, the normal response is, well, you need some games. We got, you know, play. It's
even if you're in camera.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No.
If I can get it over with in December, yeah. I can knock that out December 3rd. That may not be a bad deal.
Notre Dame opening at Duke, opening the season at Cameron Indoor Stadium. I don't know if Mike Bray would go for that, but that is an interesting proposal. Instead of opening against whoever on a Friday night in November, you're just jumping right into it in conference play. Now, if Mike Bray had a team that he has this year with a Bonzi Colson and a Matt Farrell and Martin Gebin and a veteran group, I think he's all for starting league play right out of the gate the first night of the year. But next year, when Colson's gone and Gebin's gone and Farrell's gone, I think Matt Farrell or Mike Bray would be like, it's okay if we play we play the opener as an ACC game, but how about Boston College or Pittsburgh?
See, I don't like it. I don't like it at all because,
well, you have to do that.
But the NFL starts the season off with a lot of divisional games, and I don't like it. I would like to see them at least play one game and then get into your divisional stuff after that. And from a conference, nobody wants to start up with conference games, I would think. Now, it would be good from a marketing TV standpoint,
yes,
for sure.
Well, that's the reason why they would do that, because you have the ACC network that's coming, and the ACC network, if they say, you know what, we want to make a splash the first year, let's put Notre Dame playing North Carolina, the opener, and let's put Duke against North Carolina State. You know what the ACC coaches are going to have to do? Thank you very much. We'll do it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They're not going to have much of a choice. Now, I saw you were tweeting this and just continuing the conversation about the schedule that just about the tournament the
in-season 14, tournament?
Yeah, the in-season tournament that Notre Dame's going to host.
Notre Dame, at this point every year, fans are always asking when they see Notre Dame go and play in the Maui Gym, Maui Invitational. Okay, what are they going to do next year? Like, where's the trip going to be next year? Are they going to go here? Are they going to go there? And then it's something where it also has to deal with the timing of what the roster looks like. It was great to go to Maui this year because, again, you had a veteran group that's gone to two of the last three ACC tournament championships and two of the last three Elite Eights. So you can go all the way out to Maui. When you have a young team like you're going to have next year, really the next 2 years, I don't know if it makes a lot of sense to go and play three really tough games in an in-season tournament in November. So Mike Vrabel says, we're staying home. We're going to play a four-game tournament the next 2 years. Call it like the Sid Catlett, Tommy Hawkins Memorial Invitational or something like that. That's what those teams need because they're young. They're going to take their lumps. So why not stay at home, get some confidence, get some early wins.
Going to take a timeout. When we come back, Tom's going to update us on some former Notre Dame players and what's going on with them in the professional ranks. Pat Connaughton, Jaron Grant, and Demetrius Jackson. We'll do that when we return. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. We're at Mishawaka High School. We don't bring our own marching band with us, but
I do. That's my theme.
Oh, that is your band? I didn't realize that.
They're going to follow me down 31 tomorrow to Indianapolis.
No wonder. All right. Good times. All right, Tom. With Tom Noy, I'm Sean Stiers, and real quickly, we've got about 3.5 minutes or so here. Let's update what these Notre Dame veterans are doing in the pro ranks right now.
We'll start with Pat Connaughton,
okay,
who carved out a nice little role for himself. And a key year, it's a contract year for Pat with the Portland Trailblazers. He started a bunch of games for them when they were on a recent road trip. Won a game, I think it was in, with a couple of late free throws, either in Brooklyn or Washington. Pat Connaughton's averaging 19.5 minutes a game. 6 points, 2 rebounds, an assist, 44% from the field, 38% from three, and a stellar 92.9% from the foul line. So
wow,
it's good because this was a year, this was like a make-or-break year for Pat Connaughton basketball-wise, and it looks like he'll be able to do enough to earn a second contract offer. Whether that offer comes from Portland, whether it comes from another team, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and I there was all that baseball talk, I think, kind of over the summer, and I would have thought, maybe the way things are going now, but now he does have it pointed in the basketball direction for sure.
So, and a teammate of his, as well, as good of a situation as Pat Connaughton has found in the Pacific Northwest, Jaron Grant has not found that in Chicago. It continues to be just a weird situation all the way around with Fred Hoiberg there, with Chris Dunn. They've got point guard after point guard they've tried to get in. Jaron Grant's a starter one game. The next minute, he's not playing any minutes. He's played in 27 games, averages about 23 minutes a game, 8.5 points, 2.5 rebounds, 5 assists. He's really been able to get the ball to the right guys, but the problem is he's a pass first, second, third, fourth, fifth point guard
yeah,
to where teams just don't play him. And you wind up playing 4-on-5 too much. So he's shooting 42% from the field. That's good. But he's only shooting 32% from three. That's bad. So teams are laying off of him. And he's also shooting 75% from the line. It's all about guys when they come out of the colleges into the NBA. It's all about fit. Jaron Grant has not been able to find the right fit. First with the New York Knicks, they trade him to the Bulls for Derrick Rose. And with the Bulls, you haven't seen the Jaron Grant that made him a first-team all-league guy in 2015.
All right, real quick, Demetrius Jackson.
Bouncing between the G League and the Houston Rockets. He played the first couple of weeks with the Rockets when Chris Paul was injured. Played in 12 games, 5.5 minutes a game. 0.7 points, 0.9 rebounds, 0.4 assists, shooting only 28% from the field. He's doing very, very well in the G League. He's found a home in the G League. So we'll see what happens with him moving forward with that.
If he had it to do over again, would he have benefited from that last year? Would he be in the same situation
no,
he's in now?
Yeah, he had to go. I think he maxed it out at Notre Dame from an athletic and academic standpoint. And maybe this is as good as it gets with Demetrius Jackson.
All right. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat with Tom Noy. We'll wrap things up next on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
Wrapping up Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT.
We're done. Well, you're done.
Quick prediction. Do you think Notre Dame wins tomorrow?
Yeah, they're the 18th ranked team in the country. They have to. If you're the 18th ranked team in the country, you've got to go down there and battle the atmosphere, battle any other any elements, and win that game.
Tom Noy says it is so, and his marching band will follow him to Indianapolis tomorrow. Have a good holiday.
Merry Christmas, my man. Enjoy vacation.
All right. Thank you very much. We have Mishawaka basketball coming up in about a half an hour. Budweiser's weekday sports beat, Michiana sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT South Bend.